Isle Royale has become a sort of second home for George Desort since he joined the Isle Royale Wolf Moose study in 2005 as a filmmaker and photographer. His work has appeared in Audubon, National Geographic, Backpacker, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, etc. The film that came out of that initial contact, Fortunate Wilderness, is the name of the film, was the Wolf and Moose Study of Isle Royale, was a finalist at the 2009 International Wildlife Film Festival and was a featured film of the Arctic Film Festival at North House in 2011. Now, 2 years later, George recently completed 50 Lakes, One Island, which is an exploration of the inland lakes on Isle Royale. And as we mentioned, the film is going to be shown at 3 p.m. Sunday at North House Folk School during the Winter is Gathering. George is here now with us in the studio. George Desort, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Good to be here. Good to be back in Grand Marais at WTIP.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I remember your film from 2009, or 2011 is when it was produced here, or presented here. The new film is quite different from the first one. And, you know, I have to say I was expecting to see a film about science and nature with all kinds of statistics and so on. And instead, we got something very different and very interesting. What happened on the way to making another science journal?
You know, I think there's room for the flora and fauna documentaries, but there's a lot of them out there. And I don't think that's why everyone goes into the wilderness. I don't think that's why everyone goes to a place. You know, we might want to see the wolves and the moose on the island or go fishing on the island, but I think a lot of people go there just to spend time alone in the woods and sort of reflect on life and experience life in the presence. And I thought it'd be fun to explore that. It was a bit unnerving to do, and actually making the film was easy because I was by myself and I was just keeping a video journal. The hard part was bringing it and showing it to friends and family and saying, what parts should I include? And they're like, you're going to include that? you look like a lunatic there. But I think everyone that spends time, or, you know, and a connection to place. For Isle Royale, it's a really special place for me. I get off the boat and I'm grounded. I feel confident. I feel secure. I feel safe, regardless of the elements. It's just a place that I feel really secure. And I hope everyone has that place, you know, and if you're lucky, you find it and you get to enjoy it and get to spend time there and realize it when you're in the moment.
When did you first discover that about Isle Royale?
The first day I was there, the first step off. I'm a lover of the North Woods. I spent a lot of my summers growing up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, up in Canada, through International Falls with my father as a child. And so the North has always been calling me. I make my home in Chicago, but the North is always hollering me to come up here. But Isle Royale, I think being isolated, being separated from the mainland, I think it creates a different energy than that's on the mainland, just not having the choice of leaving and running back somewhere. I mean, I love car camping. I love camping off trail, but getting to Isle Royale, you have to leave everything behind.
And was that 2005? Was that your first experience on Isle Royale?
No, you know, my first trip in Isle Royale was in 1996.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
was your father involved in that one?
He was not. I went out there by myself, and it was, you know, I felt like I was a younger person and felt like the adventure of a lifetime. And I just started, you know, I began a relationship with a place that I believe we can do. And, you know, you nurture it, you mature through it. The place changes, you change, but hopefully you're always in agreement.
And you do, as you say, in this film, spend quite a bit of time sort of verbal journaling to the camera. And you do tell stories about your father, and you really kind of go, it kind of draws you back to your life story, doesn't it, in a way?
Yeah, it does. You know, you're sort of out there, and instead of just, you know, kayaking for 6 hours one day and just keeping those thoughts to myself, I would tell those stories sort of live. As they were entering my brain, I was sort of retelling those stories. I was just talking about, you know, a stream of consciousness. And I think people that spend time alone, they can relate to it. We had the first screen was down in Canucopia last spring.
Canucopia, down in Madison?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And it was the first screen, and we were really nervous. And after the screen, the crowd loved it. And a fellow with a Jack Daniels t-shirt came up to me, a big burly guy. And he's like, "What am I supposed to tell my wife? I come to Kinokopia and I go home crying. I go crying. I related to those memories. I mean, so well, you know, my dad was a little different of a guy, but those memories, you know, they really struck a chord with me. And so I think, you know, even though they're my personal memories, I think there's some universal themes that I was unaware of until we screened it in front of the public.
I'm sure there are. And what makes it so interesting is that you're having these recollections in this beautiful, pristine area of Isle Royale. You know, that brought those things out in you, didn't it?
It really did. You know, and I think one of the mysteries of life is, you know, why do certain moments, you know, if you're just driving in your car in long distance, why do certain memories just come out of nowhere, it appears, you know, and enter your memory bank, and all of a sudden you want to think about them and talk about them. And I find that interesting and fascinating and exciting. You know, not all memories are, you know, great, but I think we should all be grateful for the memories that we have and learn from them. I don't have many regrets, and so looking back on my life was fun.
What I'm curious about too is, did you start with the idea of making this kind of a film?
Yeah, did I start that way? That wasn't the original idea for the film. The original idea for the film was truly like an exploration of going to 50 lakes on one island. There's 42 named lakes on Isle Royale, for people that are into the trivia. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of unnamed bodies of water, and I decided to, you know, round it off with 8 other lakes that I have now named. But no, it was going to be more or less, you know, go to the lakes, and this would be like, George at lake number 1. Here's lake number 2. And we were editing that, and it was terribly boring. You know, I'm 6 foot tall. Every lake from the vantage point of 6 feet tall. I mean, I love the lakes on Isle Royale, but they all sort of look the same. But, you know, my memories and my adventures to get to the lakes were all different. And I think that's where some of the excitement out of it came. And, you know, and then when I was showing it to people and sharing it with people, and they were looking at some of the B-roll, and they were like, "Well, what did you just say there? What were you saying there?" And they're like, "Well, that's interesting. That's really, I think, interesting. That sort of matches that weather. That story matches that weather. You should put that there." So that's how we went about doing it.
So you actually you were journaling, obviously, as you were out there, and that was part of your plan. But the plan to create the film you did make, a much more introspective film, but very connected to the wilderness, came after you had done the trip.
I was keeping a video journal, and I think deep down I really wanted to make that film, but I'm not sure if I was brave enough to, or confident enough, or maybe even thought I was interesting enough. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with the test audiences, though, they, you know, and family and friends, they were like, "You have to make that film. That's the film that has to be made." And it's a film that I always wanted to make. I love Fortunate Wilderness, you know, but it's heavy on the science. Like you said, there's some graphs in there, and it's science. And there's, mm-hmm. and this, you know, I think was relating to more of a universal audience. People that, you know, go out into the woods, and, you know, we all go there for a reason.
Okay, but you actually did go to 50 lakes on Isle Royale.
I did.
And did you name any after your father, I wonder?
Yep. So there's Lake George, but now there's Big George. Oh. And that's after my dad. And then there's Beverly after my mom, and Dorothy after her grandmother, and Stella after her grandmother. You know, and they're not named, so, you know, who cares?
Yeah, anyone else can name them too. You should submit them to the National Park Service now and see if you can get them permanently on the map.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would go.
Nobody else has been there, I would suspect.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, the backcountry, you know, a lot of the lakes are on trail, but I'd say 3/4 of the lakes are off trail. And, you know, which made in traveling the backcountry of Isle Royale is pretty rugged terrain. A lot of short up and downs, and a lot of swamps. If you, your feet are wet pretty much all the time on Isle Royale.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about how you did this thing. First of all, how long did it take and when, what time of year were you out there?
Yeah, so it was 80 days in total, and I did 40 days in the spring, and then I had to come back and I was shooting a feature documentary in North Carolina that summer. And so then I returned to the island in the fall, and I spent another 40 days there. So 80 days in total, 40 and 40. And the shoulder seasons are always, for me, the best time to be on Isle Royale. The animals are active, especially in the spring. Easy going in the backcountry without the leaves on the trees, and the same in the fall. So that's when I did it.
Except for the weather. I mean, it can be a little bit cold. In fact, you encountered snow in the springtime, didn't you?
Yeah, a lot of snow on the trails. You know, and I was fortunate. I got to go out on an early boat. And so I was the only registered visitor on Isle Royale in the spring and in the fall. So weather's always, but weather is just another character of Isle Royale, or living in the north. It's just another, I think it plays a character in the film. Rain, wind, water, waves, it's just adds more texture.
Exactly. And you had a lot of gear. Describe a little bit about all the gear you had to take.
Yeah, I had a lot of camera gear, and I can go about 28 days in the kayak self-supported, and that's with camera equipment. And what I would do 20, and I'd cache my gear at Rolf Peterson's cabin and then come back to his house and then resupply after 20 days. So I'd go out for 20 days at a time, and then just come back on the island the entire time. But I was caching gear every 20 days. Had a lot of camera gear. And when I was planning the trip, I planned on using a big boat and a power boat with ropes and anchors and gasoline and generators. And then I decided instead to invest into a solar panel. And so I powered my laptop and my cameras and my batteries and my hard drives all with a solar panel. And that was pretty magical.
And you didn't travel with a boat.
And I traveled just with a kayak. That's right. Yeah. No gasoline or generators.
And the solar power charger worked for what you needed?
It did. The solar panel is pretty incredible. It folds up like a map. It's an accordion shape, and it's flexible and really durable. And I could shove that. That was the last thing that would go in the kayak, and I'd cram it in there. And, it was late in the season. So that was, early in the season. So the sun wasn't out all that long. And what I learned was you have to monitor the solar panel. You had to work the angles, and every 20 minutes you had to, sort of follow it with the sun to make it work. But watching that orange light blinking while you're charging the battery and then see it go solid green, it's sort of like voodoo. You'd look around and be like, how did that happen?
Yeah, and you obviously didn't take these pictures with a smartphone or something like that. You had good cinematography. I mean, the cinematography is fabulous in this movie, and your stills also.
Well, thanks.
So you had good, you must have had pretty heavy camera equipment.
I did, camera equipment was coming along, so I used, it's called the HDSLR camera, and it looks like a 35mm camera. And I used that and had about three lenses, had two of those bodies. And then I just had a little Sony Handycam. But then I would hide a wireless microphone on my body so it would record audio. So the audio is, very important, just as important as picture. And so I had these wireless microphones. And then I had some gear made by a company in Indiana called Kessler. And they helped fund the project. And they make these sliders and cranes and things like that. And I use that for a lot of the shots.
So, and a lot of the shots are of you hiking or paddling or whatever. And you did those all, those are selfies, I gather, huh?
I guess so. And thanks for recognizing that. Because a lot of folks, after they see the movie, they're like, well, how many people were there with you filming? And I'm like, it was just me. And they're like, well, that means you had to do those three times. And I'm like, yeah, so you'd walk around, I'd look for a shot and I'd be up on the cliffs and I'd look out onto Lake Superior and see a rock outcropping. I'd be like, okay, if I paddle 8 feet to the right of that, I should be in frame. So I'd set the shot up, hit record, sprint down, jump into the kayak, paddle out of frame, and then paddle back into frame, stay that distance away from the rock outcropping, park the kayak, run up and hit stop. So, this is 15, 20 minutes of footage. And then in the end product, maybe there's 5 seconds of it.
Yeah.
But being out there for that long, you have this great luxury of setting up the shots. And I've learned to really appreciate and enjoy setting up shots and sort of hoping that they work out. It's part of being a cinematographer.
So, yeah, I mean, I did not have the feeling that there was anybody else with you at all. And so I was pretty convinced that you had set this all up somehow or other. And so it's pretty clear. Even you have a underwater picture. Tell me about how you did that.
Yeah, they make a affordable little camera called the GoPro, and pretty much every filmmaker has it in their kit now, and they're great fun, and they're durable and tiny. They fit in the palm of your hand, and they're just great fun for underwater shots.
So, yeah, so you had it extended out from the side of your kayak, and you're paddling along, and you get this underwater view of him paddling his kayak. It's pretty cool. You also portaged the kayak. I mean, I gather that was not with full gear.
Yeah, that's right. So, there are a couple lakes. There's Siskiwit Lake, which is the largest island on Lake Superior, and a little more trivia, there's Ryan Island, which is on Siskiwit Island, on Siskiwit Lake, which is, so Ryan Island's the largest island on the largest lake. On the largest island, on the largest lake in the world.
Ah, right.
And but to get to Siskiwit Lake, there's Wood Lake and Intermediate Lake. And so I kayaked there. And it's only about a half mile portage. And for those trips, I would just bring a couple, energy bars, I'd leave the stove behind, bring a water filter, and just travel very lightly, portage over, and then paddle back. And those are my favorite days of paddling and hiking to explore some of the lakes. And then, you know, I tried to spend a good amount of time at each lake.
And speaking of water, drinking water, you at one point in the film you say unfiltered Lake Superior water or whatever. So did you not filter your water?
Yeah, 90% of the time I filter my water, but sometimes I was too tired or I left my filter somewhere else at a base camp and I didn't have it.
And you haven't suffered any consequences intestinally that you know of.
That trip I did not. But I encourage people to filter their water, even if it is Lake Superior.
You talk a few times in the film about aloneness and whether you felt the need for company or not. Why don't you comment a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think for a lot of folks that spend time in the wilderness alone, you know, it's the first few days. There's that acclimation period where, you know, you miss the comforts of home, you miss the company, you miss, you know, having dinner with somebody and talking about the day or the news. And those first 3 or 4 days can be pretty tough and pretty challenging. But then I think you hit a point where you acclimate to it, and then you actually enjoy your own company. And you have great appreciation for that. And it gets to be a point where maybe you don't want to see people. And I definitely hit that point on Isle Roy after day 7. I truly do want to be alone. I'm not going to run for people, but I don't mind sort of hiding and being by myself.
Okay, Buck was just reminding me that I should tell listeners on that we're on the Roadhouse on WTIP talking to George Desort, a filmmaker who has a film that he's going to be presenting at 3 o'clock Saturday, tomorrow, at Winter is Gathering. And George, I wanted to ask you also, we were talking about the need for company or not need for company. You also talk about how you get energized by the wilderness and the aloneness. How does that happen?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I'm sure if a doctor was out there and they're, you know, studying my body physiologically, I think there is definitely a change that takes place. You know, it's mental and physical. I feel like I'm 20 years younger, and the energy is sometimes hard to manage. I'm very, you know, it's, I'm not sure what it is, but I am happy as can be when I'm on Isle Royale, and I do have just an abundance of energy. And, you know, and it's a great place to use that energy.
Did you lose weight while you were out there?
Yeah, the belt was pulled in about 3 notches by the end of the trip.
You were in pretty good shape, too, because you did a lot of bushwhacking.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of bushwhacking. And, you know, the first half of the trip, I didn't have a GPS unit. And then, you know, I was just doing map and compass and challenging myself and carrying all the camera equipment. I was like, this is a little ridiculous. I'm going to get a GPS. I'm not saying that's cheating, but it makes it a lot easier and a lot more efficient.
So you get a coordinate, and you can just walk to the coordinate, and that's where the lake that you're trying to find.
Yeah, I have to say the GPS makes it pretty easy.
Did you ever feel you really needed company?
You know, I'll say this. So after 20 days, I'd go back to Rolf and Candy Peterson's cabin, which is over on the East End, and that's where I was supplying. And seeing Rolf and Candy was always great. And they're great listeners. And Rolf Peterson is one of the great biologists because he listens to everybody. I am not a biologist. I'm not a scientist. But he listens to all the visitors. And he's always curious to hear what stories I had. Yeah. And so seeing them, you know, knowing I was going to see them, there would be a bit of anticipation, you know, paddling into their place and knowing, you know, Candy was going to have a great warm meal, maybe a cold beer or a bottle of wine. And then the company sitting in the cabin is, you know, it's a wonderful experience. And, you know, being with somebody that's so in tune with the island, I think it's different than going back to the mainland and seeing people, you know, because they're also in the same element that I am, you know.
And we should say they're longtime scientists who have been pursuing the wolf moose study on Isle Royale annually.
Yes. And, you know, and then there was a time when I saw a pack of wolves and Rolf was just, you know, terribly fascinated by that. And they're good listeners.
What was maybe the toughest thing you had to do out there if you were to pick one thing?
You know, I think that, well, one of the toughest things is before you leave, pack. You know, imagine, you know, going out today and going to the grocery store and then not going back to the grocery store for 40 days.
Yeah.
So packing is one of the, you know, and I don't hate to say it, but because it's truth, the trip was, I had great weather. I was well prepared. I stayed healthy. So there weren't any terribly big obstacles. And I think because of the time frame, because I had 40 days, I wasn't hurried. And I think anything in life, if you're not hurried, it makes it that much less difficult to do. And so I didn't feel any pressure in like racing around and running around. And that's a great luxury to have, is time.
Well, it certainly shows in the film you were able to create and the very, very interesting scenes that you depicted and the stories you told. It's a very fun film, and I appreciate very much your coming here today and talking with us about it, George. And we'll see you tomorrow at North House.
Yeah, it's great to be here. And if I could just say one thing, sure. It's an independent project. And so there's an accompanying website, and it's 50lakesoneisland.com, and it's interactive. And you can go there and you can click on different icons. And for all the WTIP listeners out there, you're going to get a little cheat sheet here. If you go to the website and you click on the logo in the upper left-hand corner, you're going to get a secret code box that pops open. And for TIP listeners, your secret word is cookies. COOKIES. And you'll get to see some video clips that other people don't get to see. And there's a lot of footage. I had 100 hours of footage. The film's only 50 minutes long. So you'll get to see a lot of the footage that didn't make the final film. And it was designed by this fellow, Jeff Holstead, and Monty Consulting out of Houghton. And then I'd like to thank the musician, Takanobu, who contributed the music to the film.
Yeah, the music is great. I had that on my list to ask you, and I didn't get there. And thank you very much for adding that piece. And I really encourage listeners to go on that website and look at the film clips. It'll get you all excited about seeing the movie. Thanks, George.